users. This broadcast is Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro, in with Mark Avery, and we're from Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, right across the street from DP&L in Moraine. And you can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to assist you with any of your firearms training needs and or purchasing a firearm, maybe getting some accessories, whatever it might be. Be glad to help you in any way we can. If you'd like to get on the show today, I want to give you the information. Just go ahead and call the radio here at
457-1290. Jeff's had to punch his cough button.
Excuse me a minute.
457-1290 is the number here into the studio.
Yeah, be sure to give us a call, and we'll be glad to get you up on the show. This particular week, there were a number of newsworthy incidents that I'm sure many of you may have seen and or heard about. I want to start off by just talking about information was released that December showed almost a 25% increase in firearms checks over the same time last year. It was a 19th straight month with an overall increase, and basically the number of NICS checks was the highest ever in the history of the system. And that is consistent with what we saw from going through November into December, that firearms sales were at an all-time high. And there are people on both sides of the fence who have offered their opinions about why that is. And I just want to throw out there that the main reason is people realize that times are changing and they're getting guns for personal safety and self-defense. And that was pretty much confirmed by a number of the incidents that occurred this last week. There was an 84-year-old man down in Cincinnati who had to use a firearm to defend himself against an intruder who apparently broke into his house and physically assaulted him with a board with some nails and or bolts hanging out of it. There was a pretty fierce confrontation that occurred, and the 84-year-old man ended up shooting the 75-year-old intruder and ultimately killing him, and used his firearm to defend himself in his home. Then the one that I'm sure most people are talking about is the 18-year-old female in Oklahoma who was home with her infant-aged child, and an individual attempted to break into the house. She called 911. While he was breaking into the house, she had enough sense about her to go ahead and grab her shotgun and her pistol, I believe. And she called the police and said, "He's breaking in. You better send somebody here." And at one point, I believe she made the comment or asked permission from the dispatcher, "Is it okay if I shoot him if he breaks in?" And the dispatcher gave middle of the road appropriate answer and said, "You have to do what you have to do to defend yourself.
I can't tell you you can, but I'm not going to tell you you can't either."
Right. Basically. She wasn't there on the scene, but basically she did make it very clear that she has to do what she can to defend herself. And that's what the young lady did. And the individual busted in the front door and she shot him, and he died there on the scene.
Part of the issue associated with that is that she was a very young widow. Her husband had died just within the last few weeks. And the belief is that these guys came to probably come steal whatever medications they might find, or just because they knew that she was going to be alone and probably an easy target. And fortunately for her and for her child, and unfortunately for the dirtbag, he found out the hard way that she was not an easy target, and he's not going to make that mistake again. Unfortunately, his partner escaped.
Yes, I believe he later turned himself in, if I'm not mistaken, or he was apprehended at a later time. But nonetheless, there was a positive outcome there in the sense that the female was not harmed, and neither was her child. And I know that there's people that think there's an alternative option that might have been available. But I'm telling you, based on the facts as we know them now, there was no alternative option. We shouldn't talk a whole lot about the consequences and all the surrounding issues. But the bottom line was she used a firearm to defend herself, to protect herself and her child. Because what's interesting about that, and I know that it's been out there, and I just want to see if this plays out. A story like that makes news the week it happens, and it'll basically wane over the next week. It'll be gone, and we won't hear for about it at all again. I can guarantee you if the reverse would have been true, if the intruder, as is so often the case, would have broken in and there would have been a sexual assault or a physical, violent physical altercation, or if the victim would have been killed and or the child would have been kidnapped, we'd be hearing about it for the next year.
Right, and there'd be a new law passed or something to try to change an outcome that could have been,
exactly.
It would get ridiculous.
Exactly, and I don't want to get too much on that. I just want to mention that, all the best of wishes go out to her. And I saw that the police department and the surrounding sheriff's office and the community banded together, and they actually took her and her child some Christmas presents after the fact, because they knew that she was not only going through the emotional toil of being involved in an altercation like that, but obviously having lost her husband, being young, she was probably having some financial hardships, and they're taking care of her, at least in that capacity. And I hope that continues, because that was a great story to break in the new year from the standpoint of an innocent law-abiding citizen defending themselves in their own home. And that kind of leads us right into the third story. And again, I want to tell you that if you want to get on the line, if you have an opinion either way, give us a call at 457-1290. We'd like to hear from you. We'd love to engage anybody in some hearty debate, if that's what you're so inclined to initiate. But the whole purpose here is to get the word out there and to get people's curiosity going in the direction where they can at least think matters through, and we can have hearty dialogue on the air. But the other stories in today's paper, the headline on it has to do with homicide victims relative to their race. But deeply embedded in that story, the issues that I want to talk about is that the critical issue that I think is important is that in the city of Dayton, the city's overall homicide rate has remained the same. As the chief has mentioned over the last – we had him on 2 years ago. We kind of referenced statistics over the last couple of years, but apparently this is data from last year. It's remaining stable.
So that's remaining stable from what it was before, where there had just had a 25% drop.
Right.
So that's important to note, that we're not talking about the old history of what Dayton's has been, but it's what's happened since there's been already a 25% drop, and it's not going up from that. So that wasn't an anomalous blip in 1 year that it just got down a little bit. It's continuing at that same rate, which is, it's too much, but it's certainly better than it had been.
Yeah, there are some mixed messages in there. There's an individual who represents an organization referred to in the article as a community initiative to reduce gun violence, who makes reference to the fact that so many people, don't know how to handle their anger in such situations except to pick up a gun. The implication is it's just angry people doing things to dissipate their anger, when in fact – the article goes on to mention, and the chief mentioned when he was on the air with us a while back, and we've seen in numerous articles since then, that the increase has mainly been due to gang and or drug-related activity. And the article even mentions that the more positive initiatives have been taken in the organizations that have helped the police department deal with the gang-related matters, and they think that that's been a critical factor in keeping the homicide rate down to where it's at, below where it was in the 40s and 50s years ago. So, again, people like to make the implication that it's the gun that's bad. Well, it's not. It's the activity that the people engage in that oftentimes result in the use of a gun in a bad way.
For anybody that has taken a concealed carry class and has their either applied for or at least filled the qualifications to apply for a license, there's a section in the back of the concealed carry manual that talks about alternative dispute resolution. And the whole mental perception behind that section of the book matches this early part of the article that says it's an anger question, and what we need to do is to prepare people to be able to deal with anger in some way other than shooting a gun. We go ahead and teach that because it's required as part of the curriculum. Everybody needs to read that. But nobody that's ever come through our class has ever thought that their first response to being angry should be to pull out a gun and shoot somebody. It's people like this group that's come back with this argument from the community initiative to reduce gun violence, thinking that that's the case, that is just complete myth. I think I would be scared of this guy simply because he believes that is people's first response, and more likely that's called projection. That might be his first response if he were able to deal with a situation that way because he was armed. But let's face it, that is not the reason people get shot. People get shot because there's other crime involved, because they're trying to do bad things. They're trying to force someone to do something that they should not ever have to do, like give them money or give them sexual favors, a rape situation. Those are the kinds of situations that it's the use of a gun was completely inappropriate. It has nothing to do with anger for the most part. Now, every once in a while, that will be somebody will go off the fly off the handle, and they will use deadly force inappropriately. And when that happens, you be sure you're going to hear about it in the media, because that's one of those, it bleeds, it leads things. But that's not the majority of time. And I think that's important to note for people to know.
It's very applicable. It is very important. And the article mentions several times the impact of gangs and drugs. As a law enforcement officer going on over 25 years now, I know that's the facts. The chief came right here on the radio show and he mentioned it. We know it from reading the FBI uniform crime reporting data that that's the case. Later on in the article, an individual says, he's talking about anger, hopelessness, and poverty cause violence. And he goes on to say he believes that there should be more positive examples and more people who care. He says the community, the churches, and the police should be sending the same message. That in and of itself is true. However, what I think they left out, and I think it's even more core than the three references that he makes there, is family. Community and the church in particular reiterate values and reinforce values that are established and maintained and passed along in the family unit. And I think they're missing the boat when they try to jump ahead a couple of point the blame elsewhere or look for solutions outside of basic family units. They're missing a very core opportunity to make some problems. And I know that in some of the communities they're referencing here that there is some breakdown in some of the family units, and many of them rely on the churches and other community entities. But in order for them to make more positive headway, they got to put it back at its core, and that's the core family unit.
And we have seen the destruction and the decay of the family in many places, particularly in the inner city. We have a lot of unmarried parents that never were married, and sometimes the so-called baby daddy just is not even in the picture. And fathers have a tremendous influence on the family and need to be a part of the family. And unfortunately, many of them also never had a good mentoring relationship with their own father and don't understand what that meant and what they needed to do and how that role is so important in the family, and the family is often decaying.
When you read that article today, I just want you to kind of analyze it pretty much paragraph by paragraph, because that's what I had to do, because they literally jump around from issue to issue. And if you just kind of look at the headline and then scattered, you know, just scan the article, you're not going to get the gist of it. But I want you to just look at the article, look at it paragraph by paragraph, and think it through and think of some of the things we've talked about. Use the internet to look up data that you can maybe draw comparisons from. But the bottom line is violent crime in the city of Dayton is on the decline. Now, it may be on the incline, or certain types of violence may be on the incline in certain areas and jurisdiction. But overall, not only Dayton, but the extended Dayton area, violent crime is on the decline, and that's important. More importantly, we need to understand that guns are not the source or not the reason for violence. The people that are they mentioned the large increase in sales over the last month. It's not people getting them to go out and commit crime, no, because they're purchasing them legally, and we know that the criminals obtain them illegally, and they're not part of that 25% increase, and that's a fact.
No, they steal the guns, or they get them from other criminals who have either stolen them or acquired them some other illegal method. Yeah, that's not the source of the problem. We're going to need to take our first break for the hour here in just a few seconds. So if you'd like to be part of this show, give us a call at 457-1290. 457-1290 will get you into the Master Control Studio, and then we will get you up on the board and take your comments and questions as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
This is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, and want to encourage you, if you want to get on the line today, give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll be more than glad to get you into the queue and get you on the radio. Mark, let's go right out to the phones.
Let's talk to Richard, who's calling from Dayton, who has a comment on the topic that we were addressing right before the break, gun violence and gangs. Richard, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
We're doing great. How can we help you?
Yeah, I heard on a different radio program about there's a guy that gets, you know, the police, they know who the bad people are, you know, the gangs and everything, and they call them in a meeting. And they tell them, you know, you can either help the community or you can face consequences and go to jail for your actions, you know, and you want to help the community. And they did a study on this. And, you know, a lot of them, they helped. And you know, like one or two of them, they didn't, you know, went to jail for what they done. But,
well,
I don't even know the guy's name, but, you know, they did it in Los Angeles and Chicago and stuff like that.
Well, they've done it across the nation in all kinds of cities, small, medium, and large. And there's some accuracy to your statement in that it does help. However, I can just tell you from personal experience, the majority of gang members and criminals do not cooperate with the police. Now, that's not to say that there's not positive outcomes when the small numbers work with the police, because many times the small numbers can lead the police to locations and the individuals who are committing a large amount of the crime. However, you still have the existence of sheer numbers working against you. So they're making steps, and I don't want to in any way, shape, or form discourage that kind of liaison between members of the community, whether they be law-abiding or criminal, coming forth and working with the police, because there can be positive outcomes either way. But the simple fact is it's still not happening widespread across the board. The police are doing a great job on their end. Community organizations are trying to do things on their end. It's the criminal element, though, who has the most to lose. They don't want to cooperate because that is their livelihood. And if they cooperate, they lose their livelihood. And many of them don't even think about alternatives to their livelihood. And if you face many of them with an opportunity to obtain a legitimate job at a legitimate wage versus continuing their criminal enterprise, some of the hardcore criminals are going to maintain their criminal ways because, in their mind, it's easier.
It makes no sense at all, though, to rob somebody of $2 and go to jail for 5 years. It doesn't make any sense.
But their personal belief, their understanding of what the possibility of them getting caught is, they don't believe they're going to get caught. And in many cases, they haven't for a long time. And then when they finally do, they may not have the consequences that they really deserve anyway.
Okay.
It's a nice tough day. Nut to crack.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call, and you brought up a very good point. And I just want to let our listeners know that is an issue that's always debated. The impact of the community cooperating with the police, and that's always welcomed. I will tell you that police agencies welcome assistance from citizens in trying to identify and investigate and ultimately apprehend criminals. You saw the ad on or the news blurb about the drug raid in Kettering. That was initiated by local citizens, as it was reported, indicating there was possible drug activity, and an ongoing investigation resulted in the apprehension of a pretty significant source in the city of Kettering, as you saw in the news today.
And that was also the topic of the discussion that we had with Chief Beal when he was on back in December of 2010. That was one of the things that has made a big difference, their community policing initiative and how that has worked and how they have worked with folks to try to set this stuff up. And the community is the eyes and ears of the police if they're willing to be that.
And I will tell you this just from knowing policing for over the years, some people like to reference that community-oriented policing is something new. Well, any police officers that's worth his weight at all understands that he has to be, to varying degrees, utilize the resources in the community in order to do his job, and it's been going on forever. Good cops in the 60s and 70s have done that forever.
Well, and long before that, I mean, that was the walking the beat was the routine, building that interface, that relationship with the businesses and with the residents and with the citizens of that community. That was how policing was done for a long time. And at the time, I think there was probably a higher ratio of police to citizens. We had a lot more police per person on the street, and so it was a little bit more possible to do that. Now when you have these large urban areas where you have a very small number of police trying to cover a much larger population, it's really tough. We need to take our break for the news at the bottom of the hour, so give us a call at 457-1290, and we'll be back right after the news. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Good afternoon and welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro and with Mark Avery, and we're from Sim Trainer. If you want to get on the radio today, just give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'd be more than glad to get you on the air. We talked a little bit earlier in the first segment about some of the newsworthy items that came across on the internet or across your television over the last week relevant to people using guns in self-defense, the whole issue of the remarkable increase in firearm sales over the last couple months, particularly over the holiday season, and some articles in the Dayton Daily News. So if any of them might have sparked some curiosity or interest, be sure to give us a call, and we'd be glad to get you on the air. I'm going to take just a couple minutes and give you a little bit of a review of a product that we got in between Thanksgiving and Christmas that we've had a chance to do some ongoing testing evaluation. We found it to be very useful in a variety of different ways, and it's the iCam Extreme Video and Audio Eyewear. Again, it's iCam Extreme Video and Audio Eyewear. It's a pair of glasses that has a pinhole digital video camera that's a great quality. It's has a high-def widescreen resolution that when we've played it back, it's been very, very clear, very crisp. The glasses come with two sets of quality interchangeable lenses, one for clear for indoor and then the other polarized black for outdoor on sunny days like today. It has 4 gigabyte built-in memory, approximately 2 to 3 hours of video. Has an audio microphone that even though it's very small, it picks up a pretty decent sound. It also has a one button operation. You just turn the button on the left temple and it activates the lens. The glasses also, through the company, you can get a hold of another company that can offer you prescription lenses if you're so inclined to utilize the prescription lenses in addition to what this set of glasses has to offer. And they can be used for a videotaping and audio recording, recreational shooting, trap and skeet and other sporting clay shooting, competitive shooting, which is where we've been using them down at the range, and in tracking some of our training. The individual doing the training can wear them to actually see himself anticipating recoil and seeing the nose of his gun dip when he fires the shots. I've got some pretty good footage of individuals who were concerned about why they were having difficulty shooting, but we were able to show them by having them wear the glasses and be able to see the problems themselves. The individuals who produce the gun, the company is called Hunter Specialties. Their primary reason and motivation was to and allow fathers and to capture their sons getting their first deer. And so these have been proven and tested out in cold environments, and they've got video, a pretty good crisp video of people shooting their first deer out in the wild. Other uses, you can use them for riding your ATV or jet skis or snowmobiles to capture the fun and excitement. They even showed a If you go to the website, which Mark has a link on the on our website to get to, they show people using them when they ride roller coasters or watching their kids at sporting events or other events, because it captures, again, both the video and audio. And when I initially saw them, I was curious about their quality.
Maybe a little skeptical.
Yeah. And then we got them in, and we've used them in a variety of different ways.
They do a pretty good job.
They do a pretty good job for the money. You're looking at $129 for a pair of glasses that does all that, and it downloads instantly to your computer. Matter of fact, the first time we got them, we did about 4 or 5 scenarios. We videotaped people shooting, and then we wore them so we could videotape the people shooting to get the actually a little bit wider angle. You put it into the computer, and it fires up in about a minute or less. And
it's a lot less than a minute, except on our computer.
Yeah. And it very crisp quality video, and it is editable. And I want to encourage people, if you have an interest in this, to stop by the shop, and we have a pair there that you can wear. You can actually go out onto the range and turn them on and watch yourself, at least watch your hands out in front of you shooting, because the only vision you're going to get is what's out in your field of vision. But or you could watch, you could actually wear them and stand behind your son or daughter or a partner that you come to the range and shoot with, and you could videotape them shooting, and they could see a little bit broader perspective. But there are plenty of different uses, and it's an exciting new item. Again, we try to find things that we think are going to benefit the shooters in a variety of different ways, but this is a nice accessory that we found to have a number of different uses. So if you're so inclined, stop by the shop and take a look at them, or visit Mark will give you the information on the website.
Already a link to their demo video on our Facebook page, and you can get to our Facebook page from sim-trainer.com/radio and then click on the link for Shooting from the Hip fan page in Facebook. Jeff, let's go out to the phones and talk with Bob, who's called in. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Can you guys hear me okay?
Just fine.
Okay, great. I got three items. Number one, a testimonial. My wife and I have had the privilege of participating in your first shots class and your basic handgun class. And I want to tell you, we immensely enjoyed the classes. We got a lot out of them. You guys have got a great facility down there, You've got a great staff. I have a particular physical disability, and your people went out of the way to accommodate me and make it a very joyful experience for us. And I want to thank you in that regard, and hopefully I can get my wife into the concealed carry class for you. Your training is superb. I've had concealed carry training in the past, and I wish I would take it with you guys, and I think I'm going to go and participate with her in the class.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate those words.
Yeah, you've got the great staff, great facility. Now, two other items. Early in the program, you're talking about the crime level being relatively stable in this country, and I want to relate a point. In countries where they've taken away guns, England and Australia in particular, in England, the method that the perps, the criminals, are now using is knives.
Absolutely. And now they're trying to regulate knives as if that was the problem.
Right. Stabbings, and then the preferred weapon of choice for criminals in Australia is baseball bats and things like
bludgeon.
That, bludgeon
mm-hmm.
people.
Yep.
And the second item I wanted to bring up was a number of weeks ago, a caller was concerned about concealed carry permit holders having the training and the mental wherewithal to handle a situation that might have been in a crowded environment. Most of the instances that I read about in the American Rifleman magazine, they have a armed citizen page, which
right.
lists articles from newspapers where people have defended themselves. In most instances, it's a one-on-one confrontation.
In Absolutely
the rare
true.
Instances where there are numbers involved, and of course it gets a lot of write-up in the press, like restaurants, bars, malls, stores, things like that. My understanding is that when the first sign of confrontation occurs, the people that are in the store, they're going to hit the deck, they're going to get behind tables, behind counters, behind corners, and things like that to minimize themselves as targets. And
That's true for people who have done some mental preparation for that, but a lot of people will just freeze as well. So it is something to be at least be aware of.
Right. And I understand, you know, the concealed carry class is one thing to, you know, make you informed of the laws and such that you can carry safely and legally. But of course, you know, the practice and the training several times per month at the range, and also to prepare yourself mentally and physically for that type of confrontation.
Well, Bob, you're very right on point. And one thing I just want to mention to expand on what you're talking about is our class, the concealed carry class, as well as just our general philosophy, is more in tune with the serious responsibility and all the extra issues that go along with carrying a gun, potentially using a gun for self-defense of your life or someone else's life. And there's a much broader issue or a series of issues that are raised when you get into this whole concept. And the other thing I want to mention is when you were talking about where situations occur, we can't predict where violence is going to wield its ugly face. And unfortunately for us, it picks any place USA, regardless of the circumstances. And just this past week, a 15-year-old took a gun to school down in Texas, got involved in an altercation, walked into the classroom unprovoked, punched another classmate in the face, pulled out the gun, started to fire what later turned out through investigation to be a BB gun or pellet gun, and the police responded, gave him multiple verbal commands to drop the gun. He didn't drop the gun, and they ended up shooting and killing him, and there was a lot of outrage about why the police responded in the way they did. And I'm not going to get into all the analysis of real guns versus fake guns and police making split-second decisions under rapidly evolving, highly stressful situations. The point I want to make, when citizens find themselves in situations where bad guys are doing harm, and I can use the example way back the beginning of 2011 when the congresswoman in Arizona was killed. That was a crowded marquee in the center of town where she was delivering preparing to deliver a presentation. And in that particular case, they overpowered him. But had an individual, the one who ultimately started the defensive act, had he drawn his gun and started shooting and shot the bad guy, he would have been totally justified and warranted. Because what we got to remember is if we refrain from action and activities like that, the bad guy is going to kill the other innocent people. all the innocent people out in the forum, wherever they might be. And we always get, well, what if a stray round hits an innocent person? That's always a possibility, and that'd be terribly unfortunate. But we should be more concerned about what if we allow the killer to go on his killing spree, because more people are going to die in those examples than the examples that some of the people that are worried about people with concealed carry and what their mindset are going to be involved in.
Right. I live by the philosophy, I hope I never have to use my weapon in a defensive situation. But my feeling is that, as the saying goes, better to have a gun and not need it than to need it and not have it.
Bob, that's a great attitude, but let me just have you carry it a little bit further. Instead of, I hope I never have to use it, if I have to use it in defense of my, I think the better approach is if I have to use it in defense of my life or someone else's life, I'm ready, willing, and capable. And please understand the difference. If you say, and this is, again, a philosophical difference, if you say, I hope I never have to use it, you're pretty much setting yourself behind the power curve. If you say, if I have to use it, I'm ready and willing, that puts you in a much better situation. And from a mindset perspective, I would encourage you and all of our listeners to give some thought to that.
Right. I think if a situation would occur, a violent situation, the animal instinct might take over.
Well, and the fact that you've had some training, and that if you follow through with your periodic retraining, and then you think things through, you're going to be way ahead. Because the positive mental preparation for those types of incidents is going to be the main thing that's going to carry you through, and then all the other things you do are going to just assist you in that capacity.
Well, you guys are doing a great job. You're providing a great service to the community. I want to thank you very much for this great radio program.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Appreciate it. Let's do a real quick update on some of the classes that are available. Our concealed carry class on the next weekend, the 14th and 15th, is already full, but we added another class on the 28th and the 29th. So if you are looking to get a class, that would be an opportunity for you to do that. We also still have some slots available in our basic handgun safety and familiarization class. That's a great preparation class for the concealed carry class. If you have any firearms experience at all, that's a great way to step up to the concealed carry caliber type of weapons, the personal defense weapons. It's a great follow-on for the first shots for people who have had that class. And we do have some slots left in the class that's on the Saturday afternoon, the 21st of January. Our advanced handgun series is pretty much full for this quarter, but if you're interested in getting signed up for that as well in the next quarter, then we will have classes starting in April. We need to take our last break of the hour, so we'll do that right now. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to the show. I want to remind our listeners that if you have any questions whatsoever regarding selection of firearms, getting into a class, which class to take, what series of classes to take, whatever it is related to firearms, firearm-related issues, please give us a call down at the range at 937-293-3914. Send us a little note on the website. You can go to the radio at sim-trainer.com, and we'll be more than glad to get back with you. Stop down at the range at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine and during our regular hours, and we'd be more than glad to assist you in any way we can. I want to remind our listeners that, as Mark mentioned earlier, he was talking about several of our classes. We have a little bit different approach and philosophy than other people have, particularly relevant to our concealed holder or concealed carry class. That particular class, in our mind, it's not for people to come and just to learn to shoot, per se. That class's main focus is on the serious responsibility of owning, carrying, and potentially using a firearm in defense of your life or someone else's life. We certainly will take you to great levels of competency in our in that portion of the class where we talk about all the fundamentals and we go out on the range and we shoot the gun. And we encourage people that have had little to no experience to take our basic handgun class or to take our private lessons, because during our private lessons we can do some customized one-on-one and get you where you need to be with your firearm so that you don't have to worry about that. Because as we've mentioned so many times, if you take the weekend class on a Saturday and Sunday and then you go in on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday to the sheriff's office and apply for your license, within 6 to 10, up to 15 days, you'll get your license and technically you're authorized to carry and you may start carrying. Then the issue comes down to how comfortable are you going to feel in day 16 that's when the bad guy comes looking for you and you have to get yourself into a situation where you have to defend your life or someone else's life. And I tell people that I want that to be the decision that you really don't have to put a whole lot of time into, that it's just going to be committed to muscle memory. You're going to draw your gun from a concealed position, and you're going to use it to defend your life or someone else's life. And it's going to be stressful, and it's going to be nerve-wracking, and all those things are going to happen, but it's better that you've thought all those things through. And that's what we try to do in that class, bring to a level of conscious awareness some of those more what we think critical issues rather than just shooting the gun. Because quite frankly, after people take private lessons and or our basic class, they punch the center out of the target, and the shooting part's not a big deal.
Yeah, it's easy to teach people to shoot. It's much more difficult to prepare for the violent encounter.
And I know we just had a first shots class today, and I know the instructor, one of the first things he said was at the end of this 1 hour of instruction, now listen to this, 1 hour of instruction, you'll learn all you need to know, all you need to know about being an Olympic grade competitive shooter. And the reality is teaching people to shoot. We had kids as young as 10 and as adults as old as in their 60s and 70s today, teaching them the shoot's the easy part, and we do a great job of doing that.
They did a great job of paying attention and drilling the targets. We had one person got all 10 rounds in the X ring, and you know that's pretty good shooting.
It was a lot of fun taking people who have never handled guns before to a level of competency in just that 3 hour period of time and seeing the smile on their faces.
Yeah, working through some of those early nerves, working through some of that, you know, how does this thing really work and what do we have to do? And it's always a great class. So we have a good time teaching it. We have a blast with the class, and everybody comes out of there with smiles. We are at the end of the show, and we want to thank you for joining us. We've had a good time to be here today. Join us again next week. Stay tuned after the news at the top of the hour for There Is a Season with Bob and Gloria. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.